This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together,
but human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Tuesday nights from 10 on Joy 94.9.
Yes, that's right. Hi, you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. And tonight on the show, we've got a lot happening, a lot coming up. We're talking about YA, young adult fiction. Yay or nay, all the ins and outs, all the sparkly vampires, all the beautiful creatures, whatever it is that we need to flesh out in this topic. Of course, as always, we have a wonderful guest in the studio. We have Geordie Kerr, freelance writer who also works at the Centre for Youth Literature. Welcome, Geordie.
Thank you.
We also have two interviews that we'll be playing later in the show. One with Karen Healy, a young adult author who's recently released a book called When We Wake. And Angela Dalianis from Melbourne University, who's doing a talk on The Walking Dead at ACME on the 28th of February. Sonia, what else can you tell us about the show tonight?
Ah, yes. Well, as you've said, The Walking Dead is something that is coming up this Thursday, actually, at ACME. And it's great to be able to touch again on some of the zombie, zombie stories there that Angela talks about as a lecturer at Melbourne Uni, of course. But also, it's great that we're going to do a little bit of a review about Beautiful Creatures. I think we'll have a three-way chat on that one, yourself, Emma, and of course our guest Geordie Kerr is going to weigh in there as well, which will be great fun.
It seems like everyone's got some really strong opinions on Beautiful Creatures.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be a good review. And if we have any listeners out there who have particular thoughts or opinions on young adult fiction, maybe what their favourite young adult novel is, young adult mm-hmm. movie, or just thoughts on the latest young adult craze, you may be a lover or a hater of sparkly vampires. It seems to be a contentious issue. Where do you fall on that one, Geordie?
I can't help but say that YA is so much more than sparkly vampires.
It is. In some ways, Twilight seems to have wrecked it a little bit, doesn't it? Or it's tainted it.
Depending on which side you fall on, I have to pay a huge amount of homage to Twilight for engaging as many readers
as
it did.
Yeah, that's true. Like J.K. Rowling did, I guess, with the Harry Potter franchise and series.
Clear. Now, let's cut to this interview with Karen Healy, and we'll just hear a little bit of a trailer from her new book at the start. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
On the last day of my first lifetime, I was so, so happy. And why not? I had everything. School, music, loving family, new boyfriend. The future was bright. Until I went to a rally to protest all the wrongs of the world. They tell me the sniper was aiming for someone else. Someone powerful. But he missed. I should have died. But they had different plans for me.
Hi, I'm Emma. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. And I'm here today talking to Karen Healy, the young adult, fantasy or science fiction author. You say on your blog that you started writing your first book, Guardian of the Dead, whilst you were teaching English in Japan. I was wondering, was that part of what inspired you to write stories for young adults?
Well, I think what mostly inspired me was young adult literature was what I have always loved most to read. Obviously, when I was a young adult, it was recommended that I read it. Sort of the reason I write YA and not the other genres that I'm really interested in, I think, is because teenagers have that really sort of liminal aspect. They're not adults yet. They're not children anymore. They have all this weight of expectation upon them. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stereotyping. I just really like that transitional aspect of life that you find in young adult fiction.
Now, you mentioned that you've always enjoyed science fiction and fantasy, and a lot of your YA fiction does seem to have a little bit of a, you know, science fiction or fantasy edge to it. I was wondering, why did you choose to write your stories in that way?
I'm not sure. I'm a real genre-mending person. Mm-hmm. I like to be able to mush things together. And I don't think that restricting myself to one genre would work terribly well for me. So I'm so grateful why it exists, because you can do, like, this is going to be a romance and a serial killer story, mm-hmm, and a magical mystery and an urban fantasy. Yep. you can stick them all together, and an exploration of myth. So I really enjoy that aspect of YA, the genre blending. And fantasy and sci-fi, I just really like the possibilities. Mm. You can say, well, this is how the world is, but what if it was slightly different? Or what if somebody had these abilities? How would that affect our world? How would that affect another world? What are the changes that could be made? I find that fascinating. For example, the idea of the vampire for teenage girls, representing both the fear and the attraction, mm, of romance, of sort of committing yourself to somebody, mm-hmm, and bodily transformation stuff, teenagers discovering their parents aren't their actual parents, they're adopted, they're actually from a fairy species or something like that. Mm. It really speaks to a lot of concerns and changes that are happening. Obviously, bodily changes are a big deal. Mm-hmm. The way my favorite is Bella from Twilight, everybody just likes to dump on. But I think there are a lot of really interesting things coming out of those books, maybe that weren't necessarily intended to be there. But the way Bella's transformation into a vampire, and not only into a vampire, but into the best vampire, like the one who can control her bloodlust immediately, mm-hmm, it really speaks, I think, it goes with her transition into adulthood, mm-hmm, and this idea that she is claiming power and claiming responsibility. At the same time that she has these supernatural powers and responsibilities and does really well at them. Mm. I think that's a fantasy that speaks really, really well to young women especially, but also to young men.
I was also wondering, what is it about supernatural, you know, science fiction or fantasy elements that attracts young audiences?
I'm not sure. I think it's, you know, similarly appealing to adult people, but young people don't feel that they're too grown up for these kind of stories, maybe. Yeah. And also, I do think there's a really strong, kids want, you know, teenagers want to change the world. Mm-hmm. And here are stories in which the world has changed, mm-hmm, and can keep changing. And because the protagonists are young people, they are the instruments of change.
Yep.
And I think that's awesome.
So it kind of, it I guess it allows more a feeling of empowerment and agency.
Right. In science fiction and fantasy, kids can literally save the world.
Yep. I'm wondering, I don't know how much feedback you've been able to get, but do you know why audiences are drawn to your novels?
I include romance in most of my stories. I'd hope that I have interesting plots. Mm-hmm. It mostly seems to be the characters, which is, I really like that, because character work is something I enjoy doing. That sort of sense of connection with characters is something that people seem to find in my books. You know, I write queer characters.
Right.
And there are a lot of kids who really like finding either that reflection of their own experiences with sexuality, or even if it's not, you know, if they go, oh, that's not right, just the fact that they're included, that should be a given.
Yeah, whereas most of us are essentially born into privilege, and we don't actually realise how privileged we are, because we might never have been discriminated against. I mean, how important is that to you as an author to include queer characters in your fiction?
It's very important. It's an absolute necessity in my writing. Mm-hmm. I sort of think, as a writer, I think it behooves me to write with emotional reality, even though I'm coming up with these fantastic situations or, you know, strange technology that I completely made up. I think that to ground it for the reader, I have to make something emotionally realistic, and that, of course, including people who actually exist, instead of ignoring it. So I sometimes readers will react and say, oh, Karen Healy has included a gay character and another gay character and an asexual character, and she's just ticking off a box somewhere. What I'm actually doing is going, do I have too many straight white characters in this book? Is this amount of straight white characters actually realistic, or have I just been conditioned to think that it is? I'm Karen Healy, author of When We Wake, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Screen at Joy 94.9.
I'm Ethan Peck.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Yes, this is Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream. Now, we are here talking about young adult fiction, and now we're going to have a bit of a chat about young adult fiction. Now, one thing that came up during the break when we were off air was this idea of genre mashing in young adult fiction. So maybe, Geordie, did you want to start us off with a bit of a conversation about that?
Absolutely. It's one of the things that I love about YA. In some ways, YA compared to any other type of books is quirky because it's defined as a genre, but it's defined by its audience, unlike all of the other types of genres. So then you get lots of different genres within YA. And it does that really, really well. Instead of being very rigid, it blurs the boundaries. There's all sorts of fun things happening.
Yeah, it was something that I actually noticed in the interview with Karen Healy. She was talking about how in young adult fiction, you can have something that's a romance and a commentary on myth at the same time, and also an alien invasion story, and you can do all these wonderful things with it. I mean, I wonder if that's part of the reason why it's so popular and people are so attracted to it.
And that track that we had earlier, I think it was Oh Mercy, was it? You chose that actually, Geordie. That lovely track. And that was to run into a book that sounds like it's a complete mashup of genre for young adult fiction. What's that one about?
That one's from Leanne Hall, who's a Melbourne-based writer. Oh, okay. And her first book was This Is Shyness, and she followed it up with Queen of the Night. And that's one of the tracks that she was listening to a lot when writing those books. Yeah. And it's got a lot happening. It's got sugar-crazed kids that mug you for sugar, and they've got howler monkeys helping them out, and lots of urban fantasy and paranormal stuff happening. It's got elements of The Great Gatsby. It's got everything.
And I should just reiterate that that track that she was listening to a lot was Get You Back by Oh Mercy, a lovely angsty YA style track.
You can't have YA without angst.
Exactly.
It's the hormones when you're an adolescent, but it is amazing how many older adult readers that these books have, a great following.
Yeah, it's hugely popular amongst adult readers, I think, because it's got a bit of everything for people to love with the genre mashing again.
Yep.
You can find something you like in any of them, and they often are a bit shorter and as such a bit easier to read.
Mm-hmm. You can go through it quickly, which is always good.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, Geordie, that young adult fiction is defined more by the characters that are being represented as young adults or the audience? Because another thing I started to notice is that a lot of adults read young adult fiction, and there doesn't seem to be anything particularly wrong with that. You know, there's no shame in it. I mean, look at Harry Potter.
Exactly. I mean, they brought out the adult covers for those books.
That's right.
Because so many adults were reading them.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they were embarrassed to have the cartoon type covers. They needed something more sophisticated to show off on the train.
Yeah, so maybe some adults do have a little
bit of an
issue.
It's a guilty pleasure. Someone I spoke to here at Joy actually said that, oh, you're doing young adult fiction. Oh, that's my guilty pleasure. So I think it still has that sort of, taint to it, which is interesting. I'm not guilty at all.
Sad that people think of it as a guilty pleasure. I think that's because they sometimes think it's not literary, but like, it's got everything. Again, it's got the candy, it's got the Twilight, but it's got really sophisticated things happening too, like Margot Lanigan and Sonia Hartnett. And people, of course, then say that they're crossover into adult because they're literary. It's like, as soon as they're literary, you can't hold on to them in the young adult market anymore.
And I really like, one of my favourites is a series by Carrie Ryan. I'm not sure if either of you ladies have partaken in that, because it does have that horror element to it. The Forest of Hands and Teeth, which is due to be made into a film, but I think they're all waiting to see what Beautiful Creatures does. At the moment, it's not doing that well at the box office as they imagined, but hey, anything could happen, especially in a transmedia world now.
That's
but the
true.
Forest of Hands and Teeth, it does have, it's zombie fiction, it's young adult zombie fiction. And it's pretty exciting. I think I have a partiality towards the horror. What about you, Geordie?
I must admit that for myself, I avoid it a bit.
Okay.
I don't like being scared.
Right. Those howler monkeys sound scary in that book you mentioned, though.
They do. It reminds me of, was it the sequel to The Wizard of Oz? There was a really strange movie, and it felt like you'd been...
I had nightmares about that as a kid.
Yeah, it felt as though you'd been hell dimension. It was just The Return to Oz,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, brilliant
The howler
film.
Monkeys
brilliant
remind film. Me of that. A little bit scary. Do you see a lot of horror in YA fiction?
You really don't in the usual sense. Mm-hmm. It's really with the zombies and that kind of fantasy that the elements start to creep in. And I was thinking about it prior to the show, and what I think is actually the most horrifying in YA is actually the really dark, gritty contemporary work, which doesn't get classified as horror.
Right. And what sort of work? Do you have any that would be favourites in that area?
One that I read recently was John Larkin's The Shadow Girl, which did win the Victorian Premier's Literary Award for young adult fiction. Brutal and tense and about a runaway teenager. And just to really ram that knife into your heart, he actually wrote it after meeting a girl, and this was her story. So there is real elements based in that. So as you're reading it, you can feel the tears running down your face as she goes through these utterly horrible moments.
And they're like real moments or supernatural moments.
Absolutely real.
Very
realistic, contemporary, violent, brutal.
Some more biographical.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay.
That is really interesting. So there's obviously this very sort of serious side to young adult fiction, but I think we couldn't have a show about young adult fiction without touching on the slightly sparkly side.
Oh, no.
We've got to unpack this because everyone has an opinion on Twilight. And Geordie, as you pointed out, it's not necessarily so clear-cut because on the one side, Twilight does have... has received a lot of criticism. But then on the other hand, a lot of people argue that it's encouraged young people to read, you know, people who, you know, weren't reading before. I mean, is it a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't want to say if it's good or bad. I personally don't like it, but as I mentioned before, it really tapped into that reluctant reader market.
Mm.
And a lot of the time when people say reluctant readers, they think teen boys who only want to play video games or watch movies or something. Mm. And that's so typecasting because there's a lot of girls out there as well.
Twihard mums.
Yeah.
There's a lot of mums.
There's
that's
a lot of mums buying
interesting.
Yeah. It's like Supernatural Mills and Boons.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. For the stay-at-home mum and the tweens.
You mean the Supernatural TV series?
I mean just the Supernatural genre.
Okay.
It's like Mills and Boons set in a supernatural setting.
It is, yeah.
But I guess the question is whether these reluctant readers who latched onto Twilight will actually continue to read after that.
I think they will. I think they started to really get a passion for Twilight, and those books are thick. I wouldn't say they're necessarily well written, but they're hefty, and there's a lot of them. So I think once they've worked their way through all of those books, they then start looking around and say, okay, what else is there?
The Host.
And there's a lot like it.
Mm-hmm. Because The Host is Stephanie Meyer's smaller, shorter book,
right,
which has been made into a film due out this year.
Mm.
So we'll be seeing that, no doubt.
Yeah, and apparently she also published... it may have just been a version of the first book, Twilight, published it online from Edward's perspective.
Oh.
So rewrote the story from a different point of view, and really hardcore fans could go online and literally read exactly the same story again but see it from another point of view. Someone who was less vacuous, perhaps. That's my feeling about that. But... yeah, Twilight certainly is a huge phenomena, and it certainly opened up a real market niche. That's the interesting thing, is there's a lot of, you know, we talked about book covers, you know, there's a lot of books being marketed now that are even changing their covers to emulate the kind of aesthetic style of Twilight and have that same look and feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, sure, these readers may go out and read more now, but they may just read the same, or the market just might be flooded for a while. I mean...
yeah, there's a saturation point, I think, a little bit like one of the crossover genres for when they get a bit older, these young adult fiction readers, and that is the paranormal romance, but I don't want to go there because I have a bit of a queasy moment when I think about paranormal romance.
Oh, you don't.
There's
like
a lot of paranormal.
There is a lot.
And it's YA following Twilight.
It's following that whole Twilight thing, and you can go into a bookstore, like you said, it's completely awash with the same look, almost like it's the same graphic artist that did
all of the book covers.
Yes.
Mm. If one sells, then they want all of the others
they
to sell
do.
As well.
Yeah. And a lot of the movie adaptations as well, of course, coming out now. I mean, we have Beautiful Creatures,
yep.
Which is adapted by novel by the authors Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll. Mm-hmm. We have Twilight, which was adapted, obviously, from Stephanie Meyer. Geordie, do you know of any more that we can expect coming out soon?
Well, there's The Hunger Games, of course.
Oh, there's, of course,
We've
The Hunger
got,
Games.
Yeah.
Next one.
I do really like the swing that's actually going into the dystopian more than the paranormal romance.
Because, I mean, to me, that has horror elements, which is always a favourite of mine.
Yes.
You know, beasties and radioactive mutants and stuff like that in The Hunger Games, which was fun.
And death.
And death, but they took out a lot of that.
Hmm.
That's a shame.
Well, you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Just hate hiding all the time. Feeling like everybody's whispering about me.
Is that her?
My mama says her whole family are Satanists.
I like you.
You don't know anything about me.
My family's different.
You a witch?
We prefer the term caster. When I turn 16, my powers will be claimed for either the light or the dark.
You think you can keep Lena so good, so innocent? Wasn't I the same before I was claimed? Look at what I am now.
I don't know what I'll be. I have 75 days left.
Seraphine.
The curse has already begun.
Lena will not turn dark. She's too strong.
She's gonna be more powerful.
Yes, you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, and that was the trailer to Beautiful Creatures, the latest movie adaptation in Hollywood's craze with young adult fiction right now.
Mm.
So we thought we might have a little bit of a chat about that. Now, Sonia.
Beautiful Creatures.
I believe we have a little bit of a review.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to,
we're
going to
try
off?
I'll tackle it first with the specs, I guess.
Yeah.
It's considered a romantic fantasy film based upon the novel by two women, Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll, who worked on this project, I guess you call it, of series of books. The film is directed by Richard LaGravenese and stars Aidan Ehrenreich and Alice Englert. So at least they got one thing right, and that is fresh new faces as far as the leads go for the young adults in this particular adaptation. Now, it's adapted by this on the screen from somebody who did The Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, if that means anything, and that was Richard LaGravenese, who's also the director. And of course, it also has the wonderful Jeremy Irons and Viola Davis, Emmy Rossum, Thomas Mann, and the amazing Emma Thompson.
Mm.
All right. So it's a fantastic film as far as I think most of the aesthetics to it, the looks and probably the passion in it.
Mm-hmm.
But at 124 minutes, I did think it was a bit long for myself. But yeah, what's it about, Emma?
What's
How
it about?
Can we say?
Well, I mean, it is another addition to that, you know, supernatural romance sort of thing within young adult fiction at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, personally, see, I went in with lowish expectations, and I was quite surprised, actually. I felt as though the film was actually quite self-reflexive, so I felt like there was a knowing humour sort of woven throughout the film. There are a few points where it was actually funny and I didn't expect that, and I felt like it was done knowingly. So, yes, this is...
That was a male character, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, the male character.
Ethan
Waite.
Yeah.
But, of course, there were problems with it. I should also add Emma Thompson, amazing.
Yeah.
And she lent incredible credibility to the movie.
Yeah.
She was just fantastic. But for me, there was a little bit, a few too many dichotomies present in terms of separating, you know, male and female and good and bad. So we have, you know, for the main character, Lena, she has to just wait and see what fate will fall upon her.
Okay,
she'll
so
become.
Why? It's her 16th birthday.
It's her 16th birthday.
There's a lot of pressure about what is she going to become? Light or dark witch?
Yeah.
And apparently you can only be one for the rest of your life.
And for
That's
some
right.
reason, women don't get the choice. They just get forced with something, and men do. They just get to choose. And when Ethan questions
clear.
Her about that...
That didn't seem clear in the film with
Well, she just says, what? I don't know why it's like that. It just is.
Yeah, Geordie?
It seems like men get the choice in the fact that her uncle as well It comes out in the film. I don't think it's a huge spoiler, but if you are worried about spoilers, block your ears. used to be on the dark side and is working on the light for her benefit.
Yeah.
So he made that choice and swapped over partway through.
And he's played very cleverly and smooth and suavely by Jeremy Irons. I mean, there's some great scenes in there too, where he walks into a church and the whole community are against this, the Raven. What is their last name? Ravenshawk, is it? Oops,
oh,
Ravenwood,
right?
Ravenswood, yeah. They're a family that are doomed or have this curse on them because they're bad, you know. They're witchy and bad and warlocky or whatever, and play around with dark ancient spirits. And, I mean, it's set in the South as well, you know, Louisiana, I think it is. And
yeah, so, which it adds a lovely sort of True Blood, you know, that kind of... eerie southern undercurrent.
Without all the sex.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll chat a little bit about this in a minute, but right now I'm going to play you an interview with Angela Delianis, who is talking about The Walking Dead this 28th of February at ACME. Now, Sonia was lucky enough to interview her, so we're going to have a listen to that now and then come back and have a little bit more chat. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream. I have here in the studio Melbourne University's Angela Delianis. Welcome. Apparently, there is a not-so-live in the studio examining The Walking Dead coming soon to ACME, and you are involved with this project.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Next Thursday night, the 28th.
That's it.
Talking about Living Dead and Walking Dead.
It's going to be a great range of people as well. There's other broadcasters and Paul Verhoeven. You've got Luke Ryan, yourself, Angela. Rick Grimes won't be there, but I'm sure.
Sad news.
Not in the flesh in any way. What has brought you to, you know, end it all with The Walking Dead?
I've been obsessed with horror films and horror television and everything horror since I was a kid. Since old Deadly Earnest days, late at Friday nights. And the zombies have just always fascinated me. Zombies, vampires as well, but the zombies, there's something about them that's just, it just gets under your skin, so to speak.
Gets in your brain.
Yeah.
The zombie trope, the zombie culture, what's brought you to what the obsession with zombies?
I think the thing that I find really interesting about the zombie genre is that often it is quite a serious horror genre. I mean, there's the spoofs and there's sort of the crazy comedy stuff, but at the core, especially since Night of the Living Dead, the Romero classic of 68, it's always been concerned with themes about, you know, society, humanity, and the zombies always been a way of actually analysing how horrible humans are and what happens to humans when in crisis, like the real human being comes out. And the zombie apocalypse idea is about that struggle of humanity to survive. What's revealed is not too nice people underneath.
Now, The Walking Dead is something, it's an amazing phenomenon, how that has taken so many things that we generally consider to be zombie style, I guess you call it, the zombie culture and tropes, and has turned it effectively into one of the most popular television series.
I think it was the highest rating series on cable.
Season 3, I believe.
Yeah.
Broke all records.
It did, and I can understand. This season has been amazing, really confronting, and they've really upped the ante. The characters have progressed since the last season in terms of time, therefore their sort of survival skills and their nastiness has gotten even tougher. It's really hardcore, which is really strange for television. It sort of broke tradition with television for introducing hardcore horror onto the screen.
It is,
There's season 3 and it's still going strong. If anything, I think this season's been like the most successful and it's drawn in fans that it didn't have from first two seasons.
To you, as a fan but also an educator and someone who is a horror fiend, do you think are the reasons that it's become so... Why it's worked?
I mean, there's a lot been written on the resurgence of the zombie genre since September 11,
yes.
The whole crisis. Yeah. And it's all about, you know, global pandemics and humans being forced beyond their control to survive.
Mm.
And it comes down to serious things like the survival of the human race. There's a few academics who've written about the resurgence of new horror cinema, and the Living Dead zombie films are some of the most popular in terms of, you know, subgenres of horror because they do have to do with, you know, things things like total destruction, and even on a basic core level, the destruction, you see a dead person, it reminds you of your own mortality.
Yes.
So it's sort of basic, I don't know, it gets you to your core sort of thing. I remember the first episode when Rick Grimes comes out of the hospital, he sees that half body crawling across the grass, and there's something, I know, maybe I'm weird, I don't know, but there's something aesthetically just beautiful about that image, but also horrifying.
But he goes back and he does something so humane for something that is so non-human. And, you know, and I'm thinking, gosh, they wrote that in. He goes back to the park where he sees that poor creature, but he doesn't see it as a creature. We see it as a creature at the start. And that's when I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a different sort of show.
Yeah, because it's also about feeling sorry for them in the beginning, but then becoming totally inhumane in relation to the living dead in the way they treat them. Yeah, but he puts her out of her misery, and that's just an amazing moment. We're not given a reason as to why they're zombies. We haven't been, it's like it's the unknown. So this happens to humanity and no one knows why it's happened. And just everyone's just become so hardcore. The kid now is just this ruthless little killer. And everyone's fighting for their little bit of turf, and it's sort of back to primal kind of human sort of social groupings. And the governor character is an amazing character, totally psychotic. And another one who won't let go, old family values. He's got the daughter trapped away in the cupboard. Or had her anyway.
Yes.
Combing her lovely hair.
Very disturbing.
Very disturbing.
Keeping those heads in those like fish tanks or something.
I'm amazed at how many people I speak to who watch the show. People I wouldn't think would be into it, but they're totally hooked.
Because it's bringing in a melodramatic, almost soap opera aspect.
It really is.
Like I said, with those tough sort of police vigilante type of feelings and style, a lot of action as well, and just happens to have zombies. Why get together now and why do this examination?
Published a book called The Horror Sensorium, and I looked at zombies. Zombies were a real presence in it. A lot of the zombie films really attack our senses. They bring us back to our sort of basic human needs, fears. Through that attack, that it forces us then to confront a lot of the social, human kinds of issues, about mortality, about human relationships that these films actually explore. And I think the TV series does that beautifully too, but it sort of extends it because of the ensemble cast and so on.
Yeah, it's a fascinating show. I mean, where is it going to take us? All right, so it's coming up soon. The Not So Live in the studio examining The Walking Dead, and you'll be one of the people examining along with Jess McGuire. What would be something you would say to someone, look, this is essential. In a zombie apocalypse, you must make sure you do this.
They've got to learn to, whatever weapon they use, target the head.
At Acme. And it's on Thursday, the 28th of February of this year. I found another freak. Yay. And her name is Angela Delianis. And I want to say thank you for coming into the show.
Thank you very much. It was great fun.
I should say coming on. Not in.
Even
in the studio.
Yeah. Whatever. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jen Zaska.
And I'm Sylvia Zaska. And we're the Twisted Twins.
And I'm Little Miss Risk.
And you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Dolly Parton says, come out tonight. Yeah, we love that song. Yes, indeedy. And we heard Angela and Delianis. Thanks, Angela, for chatting to us about some zombie stuff and The Walking Dead. And, of course, we're looking at young adult fiction this evening. But I just want to say this evening's show is really important as far as part of our mission as ambassadors of something called Women in Horror Recognition Month. Now, that means basically Women in Horror Recognition Month means that we assist underrepresented female genre artists in gaining opportunities, exposure, and education through altruistic events, printed material, articles, interviews, online support, and things like radio shows like Sci-Fi and Scream. So we hope to break down some of the social constructs and miscommunication about women in horror, women who make horror, and female professionals who write or direct this sort of genre. So that's the vision, a world wherein all individuals are equally given the opportunity to create, share, and exploit their concept of life, pain, and freedom of expression in horror films and horror literature and so on. Okay, because it is the year 2013, not 1950. All right, need we say more?
Sounds great.
Now, we've had some messages too, actually.
We have, yeah. Who's been messaging us, Sonia?
Mm-hmm. Robert from Caulfield says, think how sophisticated the ideas are in Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, adults reading fiction books seemingly for younger readers has a very long history. Indeed, it does.
True.
Mm-hmm. And we have another one here too from a member called Jakey. He says, what do you girls think of Stargate? I'm not sure what he means. Atlantis.
Stargate Atlantis. Well,
yeah, I don't know.
Is Stargate Atlantis young adult fiction?
Perhaps it is.
I wouldn't have said so.
I wouldn't have said so. Maybe it's just a general, what do we think?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good.
I think if it's there and they've got, young, particularly female protagonists, and they're kicking ass, alien ass maybe even, that's good by me.
Yeah, more power
for sci-fi.
To them.
And the other message is my fabulous YA series is Darren Shan's Demonata series.
Now, we were chatting a little bit about Beautiful Creatures before we cut to that track. So we did a lot of chatting in terms of just generally what we thought, some of the themes that were present in that. But we didn't really get to an overall, you know, review or rating for the film. Sonia, what do you think?
Well, it's hard for me to rate something that I haven't actually read, so I do feel a little bit of guilt pangs there, but I'll move on. I'm giving it a 2 out of 5 for my rating, simply because the 2 that it gets is, I think, the acting performances. I think everyone was trying their best to have a go at something that maybe even they weren't too sure about it. The plot line was a bit murky for me, as far as I really obviously am missing something by not reading the books. But again, like the performances, I was really thrilled about. I think the two young leads, it was very refreshing to see people that weren't Robert Pattinson or Kay Stew. And Alice Englert, of course, is pretty special because she is part Kiwi. Her mum is Jane Campion, so she's got to be doing well. And I just thought there was more dark humour in it and more horror for me myself, or elemental supernatural elements in it. So yeah, I give it 2 out of 5. And it's out through Roadshow Australia, and it's pretty much everywhere now. Yeah. Playing everywhere. And
it
you,
is.
Emma?
Okay, for me, I mean, Sonia, I agree with you. It had a little bit of that dark sort of knowing humour, which I found quite refreshing. It was nice to see this kind of slightly sappy supernatural young adult film that wasn't taking itself too seriously. I wasn't expected to constantly be, you know, clutching my pearl necklace and gasping at the leading man. It was nice to be able to laugh at it sometimes. I mean, Emma Thompson was incredible, but I don't think she was incredible enough to be able to ride the whole film through the end. To save it, Look,
okay.
It was better than I thought it was going to be. I'm going to give this one a 2.5 out of 5 stars because, all in all, I was entertained. Some of the, representations of race and women, which we didn't get to go into to too much detail, but it was a bit iffy at times.
Yeah, it was a bit unusual. And
I questioned some of their the themes that seemed to be being pushed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was entertained, so I gave it a 2.5 out of 5. Geordie, what do you think?
I wasn't a fan. I would say in this case, go for the book if you're really curious about Beautiful Creatures. But I can see the argument behind 2 stars, one for Jeremy Irons and one for Emma Thompson.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah,
that's great.
So how many stars would you give this?
2 would be generous. I'd be inclined to go 1.
Wow.
That's all right. That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
No worries.
A damning review.
Okay.
But everyone feels differently about these things. Have you had a chance to read the books, Geordie?
I haven't yet, actually.
Oh, it would be great to hear from someone, actually. If anyone out there has read the books and can tell us how they think the books compare to the films, because there seems to be a lot of chat about, you know, whether it's been adapted faithfully or not. If you have an opinion on Beautiful Creatures, because it's a series, isn't it? There's a few
there's
more
series
to come.
Five. Oh, goodness. Mm. All right.
And do we know, are they going to adapt all of them into movies?
I would predict no. I would finish it at that, saying pretty much the box office returns are very poor. We may not see another one. That's how it usually runs.
Yeah,
just
I think
like
they left it open,
the Golden Compass.
It would need the, need the sales to get there.
You know, look, we played Coming Out Tonight, Dolly Parton, just to jump to something completely different. LGBTIQ content. I know we're running out of time, but Geordie.
Super brief.
Yeah.
YA LGBTIQ.
Wow. Yeah, why not?
There's some amazing stuff, and as with everything, there's also a bit of average stuff as well. So sometimes it's a case of sifting through. I think one of the problems with YA is, particularly with the people writing it, they think teenagers, they think queer, so it's all about the coming out.
Yeah.
There's already some really brilliant stuff out there that sometimes I think it's rewritten again and again.
Do you think there's somebody that would be highly recommended? Doesn't have to be most recent, or
Hazel Edwards is certainly considered one of the pinnacles in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm trying to think my mind through everything else. Obviously from America, David Levithan is definitely one of the big names.
I have heard of him, actually. Yes. Or not. A bit embarrassing. But there are so many, like, to judge what someone would recommend if they had teenage kids and they were going through a lot of questioning, as they call it.
Yeah, I think some of the really great stuff, I really liked that you had the interview with Karen Healy before, because she does tend to touch on that. And in her book, The Shattering, it's not the focus of the book. The focus of the book is about kind of murder investigation.
Yeah.
But it does have a queer character in it who comes out during the course of the book.
Okay.
So there's definitely good stuff like there around. To pimp my workplace, the Centre for Youth Literature, we've got a conference in May called Reading Matters.
Okay.
And I am so excited because we've got Raina Telgemeier from the US coming across.
Mm-hmm.
And her latest graphic novel was shortlisted for the Stonewall Award in America.
So what is good about her?
Again, it's got queer elements, but it's about just being a teenager, and there is that element of wrestling with it, and it actually surprises you. I don't want to spoil it, but it sneaks up.
Oh, you'll have to give us some more details on that.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
This is Benjamin Williams from GamerCon in San Francisco, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Hi, yes, we're back. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. And unfortunately, we've come to that time of the show where we have to say goodbye. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Jodie Kerr. Jodie, thank you so much for coming into the studio tonight.
Pleasure.
And can you give us a rundown on places people can go, websites your own as well, where people can connect and find out more about some YA fiction?
Excellent. Well, the website for teenagers that my workplace, the Centre for Youth Literature, runs is insideadog.com.au. That .au is very important, otherwise you get something completely different.
Righty-o.
Yes.
But some great sites, particularly for queer YA. There's a site called We're Here, We're Queer, What the Hell Do We Read?
Ooh.
There's also gayya.org and also queerya.blogspot.com.au.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I should also mention a thank you to Angela Delianis and Karen Healy for their wonderful interviews. And just a little bit of info on next week's show, which will be March 5th. We will be having our next A to Z of Horror segment with Bailey. We're up to the letter C, so we'll have to all wait and see what she has to say then. We'll be having our first A to Z of Science Fiction, a new segment to complement the A to Z of Horror. And, of course, some science fiction news. And any final thoughts from you guys, Geordie or Sonia, on this topic?
I would say that YA is a yay.
Yes.
Me
well,
too.
That was something we asked at the start of the show, yay or nay. So it sounds like we're all definitely yay.
Yay.
Even
yay.
Though there are some yay. Less than positive
hopeful.
Examples, but you get that
so
in every
much more good
you get that in
there
every
so
genre.
Yeah. And of course, yes, it's Fabulous Woman in Horror Recognition Month. So if you want to go to our Facebook page to find out more about what that means and recognizing women who do work in horror, go ahead, check us out, Sci-Fi and Squeam on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
Fantastic. Thanks for listening, guys. This has been Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Are you prepared for the zombie apocalypse? In case of emergency, break glass and tune in to Joy 94.9 on a Tuesday night for Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.